Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 566. It's the 23rd of August, 2016. On the podcast today, I have oil and gas sector authority Malky talking about Premier Oil. Very interesting state of play there. Also on the podcast, full-time investor Wheelie Dealer talks about strategy and stocks. He also covers utility-wise. And I've had this company on my watch list for a while. And Neil Woodford's got a big chunk of the shares. They're hitting a support level. Very interesting there. I also have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. This is a huge measure or mark of sentiment. There's a new number one. And also, today's suggested one for your watch list has been submitted by Mark, and it's Galileo Resources, GLR. I'll read out the reasons for that in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
I'm joined by Malky, oil and gas sector authority. Good morning to you, Malky, all right?
Yeah, morning, Justin. Very well, thanks. And you?
Yes, I can't complain. You know, the markets were showing they were going to open negative. They've opened positive slightly, which is nice. Considering these last 2 weeks are, you know, the anniversary of that big fall we had last year. So there's always, you know, that worry in the markets, isn't it, that it will sort of just copy last. Do you remember the big sell-off last Sunday?
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, and but at the moment, of course, we've got some reruns in the oil market because we've... We had got up to about $50 for Brent oil, which was pretty good in the last two or three weeks.
Yeah. So what are you looking at stock-wise?
Well, yeah, the oil price is up nearly 20% this month so far.
Yeah.
I'm picking out a stock which it is in the bucket list and probably one of the more nervous holdings earlier in the year. But I'm picking out Premier Oil.
Yeah.
Justin, PMO. Mm-hmm. Now, this stock has actually performed very well. And if you bear in mind that right at the beginning of the year, it was suspended because they were trying to do a deal, and there were a lot of people who thought this one wouldn't pull through. Partly because of the debt, but actually, I think that they had results last week, did a big presentation to analysts, and I think that they will pull through actually. And if they do pull through, then this is going to be a sort of a butterfly emerging. And the reasons for this are straightforward. I mean, they have worked at senior management level very carefully to make sure that they do all the things they have to do when you're in a tight spot. So they've increased their production quite handsomely in the last few months, and made that production more efficient. So it's really upgrading the portfolio. They've done two or three things. They've done obviously the E.ON deal, which we were talking about, and that is turning out to be, you know, a ripper of a deal, because not only, you know, did it happen just at the right time for them, but it is bringing unexpected benefits, I think is probably the right way of putting it. And so they've got that going on. They've obviously brought Solan, which is their North Sea producer, on stream after significant difficulty, one must say, but actually Solan is doing very well. So, you know, that part of the portfolio is being upgraded all the time. And of course, like all these companies, their costs are coming down dramatically. And if you bear in mind that it was only 18 months ago, their cost per barrel were $35. On Thursday, they announced that those costs per barrel are now $25 and still falling. So that's the key thing on that front. So the only other thing, apart from what I would call just generally successfully delivering the operational network, is that there are a couple of other things to bear in mind. First of all, you know, the big worry for a lot of oil analysts and a lot of investors was the amount of debt they carry, which is about $2.5 billion. And there are two things here. Yes, I mean, I am, and I was always being worried about the fact that they carried so much debt, but I know that the management want to pay it down as and when they can, but they're not going to rip the company apart and sell everything, the exciting things they've got, off in the process. So I was very encouraged to hear at the meeting on Thursday that the consortium of lenders to them have been around a table for some time, and I think that we might see an announcement probably at the end of September that says that they've come to a deal with the their main lenders. They'd still be there, and there'll be changed terms, but I don't think they'll be materially badly changed to the company, so I think that that's good. And I think that as they go forward, they've got a big development coming on stream called Catcher, which is coming on stream, I think, the second half of next year, which will bring in more revenue, and they'll start to pay down that debt. And of course, the final thing is that in the slightly longer term, they've still got this big Falkland Island development called Sea Lion, which I would suggest is, because it's such a big development and it's a long way away and so on, people are concerned that it won't happen. I think it probably will happen. I think that they're taking it very carefully at the moment because they can't commit themselves to such a big deal with within there with Rock Opera, if you remember. I think they will develop that. They will farm some of it down, I'm sure of that. But you know, overall, I'm really, really happy that things are going much better at Premier. I'm not trying to duck the issue on the debt, but I think they're upgrading their portfolio. They've brought in this E.ON deal, which is really significantly better than expected. They sell gas into the Far East, and the Singapore market is as strong as it's ever been. So I'm expecting good news to continue on production. Catcher to come on stream next year. Get the go-ahead from a number of other small developments in the Southern Gas Basin. And then hopefully Sea Lion, you know, 2021, I'm expecting that to be producing oil.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm looking at the share price of this. When you think of it, this company was £5 a share sort of 5 years ago. At the start of this year, it was down just below 20 pence. It's now rebounded. It's at 75 pence, but it's in that range now. But it's up over all the moving averages, so technically it's looking quite good. But like you said, the only problem they've got is that debt. But it's one of those things, if we see some positive headway there, this can re-rate, can't it, you know?
There's absolutely no doubt. I'm not worried the fact that the stock has tripled since the beginning of the year. This is small beer. And as I said, I am aware of the debt situation, have been all year, and I've been watching other oil analysts say, I'm not going to give it the benefit of the doubt. I think in investment terms, sometimes you have to give these things the benefit of the doubt. I think the management is pretty good. Don't forget, it was changed a couple of years ago. And I think they're doing all the right things. And barring a complete disaster on the oil price, they're going to be profitable at pretty low oil prices going forwards, with quite a couple of quite big developments being done at a cheap rate. So they're being delivered because the oil price is coming down so much, and the service companies are fighting very hard to get business. So, you know, if you're doing a big development at the moment, in this case, Sea Lion, if they go ahead with it and catch it, they'll be getting very good prices for what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's a stock that there's obviously risk there. It could be big risk. There's obviously big reward there. You know, and knowing that, that's where you make your own decision, don't you? You think there can be a big risk here, but like I said, the reward can be big as well. You know.
Absolutely right. And you know, there's no point in me sitting here saying, stick to the five most conservative stocks. The audience that we're talking to, they're listening now. They're saying, yeah, I'll take a decision on that myself, but I don't want to, I think it's the right thing to do to put one or two of the high-risk plays in that portfolio in the bucket list. And, if things start to look wrong, you just have to cap them. But as you say, these shares were a lot higher a little while ago. Mm. It's a big company, and I think it's gonna be okay.
Marvellous. Well, definitely one on my Vox Markets watch list. Marky, lovely to speak to you. Speak next week.
Okay, look forward to it, Justin. Take care now.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Wade.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time private investor, Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
Yes, I'm all right. And I've got to point out, I put a link to your site, and you pretty much diarised on most of your trades or all of your trades. What is it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got a bit on the website that's basically the trades, and everything I do is mentioned on there. But I'm not like a really highly active trader. I mean, this year I've really done very few trades at all, to be honest.
Haven't you?
And I haven't felt a great need to, I was thinking about this last night. Mm. One of the things that really hit me was, and I know you've done this yourself, Justin, because I remember us talking about it, the importance of buying when we're coming off of the lows. Yeah, so when the markets have a big pullback like they did for Brexit or whatever, you know, it's so important to be buying just after those lows, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And equally, so it's almost like whenever we get these big market drops, that's when I'm doing my big buying. I mean, as a sort of general thing, in between the drops and whatever, then yeah, I'll be buying the odd thing here and there. But most of my buying, I tend to do on these sort of pulls off the bottom. And equally, when markets feel toppy, which is what they obviously do now because they seem really quite stretched, you know, I'm sort of thinking, I don't really want to be buying now. You know, this is the time, if anything, to be selling stuff, not buying stuff.
Yeah, do you know what? I agree. I mean, at the moment, I do. I mean, I'm more in the penny stock area, but I'm top slicing quite a bit. If I'm up quite a bit in stocks, I'm top slicing because I'm thinking, I'm just waiting. I don't know. I'm waiting for a sell-off, pretty much.
We feel like we're treading water, don't we? It's like we all sort of sense that something's around the corner, you know, like a big shark is coming at us. But, you know, obviously we don't know the shark will definitely get here. The shark may not come and it may carry on going up, but that seems unlikely. You know, we've had such a rally and I'm finding it's harder to find good stocks now. You know, I look around and there's pockets, like we've discussed house builders before, and, you know, they still probably look attractive, although I think a lot of the good gains off the bottom have been had.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's getting harder to find stuff, and I'm seeing loads of stocks on forward PEs over 20, and I just think that's a lot of money. You know, it's a high ask for some of these things.
The thing is, you know, I every now and again, I mean, once or twice a week, I look on, you know, Pro Real Time, and they do a filter for oversold stocks on a weekly basis. And the last one that I found was EasyJet, and I bought that.
Yeah.
And they haven't had one in that filter, hit that filter for a while now. And I'm just thinking, this is a sign of a market that's, you know, it's rallied. And we know a market can be overbought for quite a while. It can stay overbought for quite a while. But I think now is not the time to. I mean, if you're grabbing a bargain, fair enough. You know, I mean, there are you know exceptionals out there,
especially in the smaller things. I think it's harder in the FTSE 100 stuff. You know what I mean?
Because
that is much more correlated to the market anyway.
Yeah. And so I'm basically, you know, and also I know you're in the almanac, wasn't it? This time last year we had the big sell-off, you know, because of China. And literally, I think that I looked at it. The FTSE did 13% drop in a couple of weeks, and
stone, wasn't it? I remember the fear and terror on Twitter and stuff. You know, you can just really sense it.
I don't know if it's going to resonate, because it was last week and this week it happened over, and nothing's really happened these last 2 weeks. And I think, you know, the worry is not so much there, so much with China at the moment, or we haven't seen any bad figures come out there. I mean, the thing I'm thinking that can only shake the markets a bit, which is pretty much, we had a little tiny little wobble, but there's the chance that now, you know, interest rates in the US
I think that's what will happen. I think markets will probably sell off anyway, because they always do around this time of year. You know, there's no real rocket science here. So I think markets will sell off anyway. And the media narrative will be, oh, it's because interest rates are going to rise in the US. That's what I suspect will happen. Mm-hmm. And it is so often I think it goes that way. I think the market moves first, and then Bloomberg and CNBC come up with a story to fit the narrative.
Yeah.
Obviously, well, things like.
Exactly. Well, I'm looking at fundamentals there, right? And I'm saying that it seems like we've had Persimmon results out today saying they'd be very good results, you know, and the Brexit thing hasn't been seen yet, or if it is happening, they don't really know. And we've even had PMI figures from Europe today and looking quite good. Look like there's going to be growth in the Eurozone. There's not a big problem there. So, you know, I just think, you know, the media obviously had that vote, and they wanted to create a bit of a storm there, but obviously nothing's really changed yet. Article 50 hasn't been invoked, nothing's been changed, so trade is still going on as normal, you know. So
it's going to be very peripheral. I mean, there's going to be, you know, maybe certain financial institutions in London will have decided to rein in a bit of expansion or something. You know, there's going to be little peripheral changes, but then again, there's probably some positive effects that probably counteract that anyway, you know, because of the weaker pound, more tourism, this kind of thing. So yeah, as you say, you know, I don't think the effects of Brexit's really sort of hit the economy yet much.
You still got your short on, have you? I added
to the short probably about the start of About 2 weeks ago, I added to the shorts. Yeah, I was getting some sort of signals in the market. I thought, right, I'm going to, you know, put a bit more on, especially as we're now heading towards autumn. One of the things I was going to say, it's funny, we were talking about the Almanac. If you think about it, you know, markets historically tend to rise, you know, something like 7% a year for the FTSE 100 or whatever. Now, if you break that down to a weekly average, right, it's pretty obvious that most weeks stocks are going to rise, you know, only a little bit, but they will rise. And one of the things that hit me, I was looking through the Almanac, and this week and next week tend to be fairly sort of okay. But what hit me was September, which is known as the worst month, you know, of the year. Yeah. Every single week is down. And I've never seen that on any other month. I've never noticed that before. Every single week is on average down.
Yeah, do you know what? I've got this, the whole position in EasyJet is one of our trades, first trade for our experiment there. And it's at about 10% now, a 10% gain from where we bought. But they've got results out in September, around about the 3rd, trading update. And I looked through the entire years yesterday of their passengers numbers. And I know they give a warning about the Brexit, and they say there's a lot of terrorist activity that happened and a couple of strikes that happened that has affected them. But looking at their passenger numbers, do you know what? I mean, there's passenger numbers are fine.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Look, I'll go through. It's going to be boring, but I'll go through a couple. I mean, just in July, you know, passenger numbers up by 6.7% on last year. In June, up by 5.8% last year. You know, up by in May, up by 5.7%. Up by 6% in April. I mean, it's all that throughout the year. The lowest they're up is by 4.3%. That was in April. So, I mean, I think, hang on, why are they? Obviously, there's a currency change there. We've had a bit of a drop in the currency, maybe 10%. But this stock has fallen, you know, sold off by over 30-40%.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. And since that, I mean, oil's had a bit of a rally, but it looks like that rally might even be faltering. So
and they do hedge though. I mean, it's almost like 69% of the fuel prices hedged to like 2017. Yeah. I'm just thinking this. It's oversold. Completely oversold here. I'm thinking, hopefully. Anyway, so knowing that, you said September is a bad month.
A bit more out, yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping to hold until the results, and then maybe take a bit of profit. If it rises, obviously, I'll keep in there. But I mean,
interesting one, because if it rises quite a bit leading up to the results, might actually be pricing in some good news. Mm-hmm. So maybe you want to consider just before the results, if it rises up to them, selling it just before the results. If you're, you know, because the danger you run is if you take it into the results, say there's something, you know, a bit concerning in the results, it could just tank.
Yeah, so, well, do you know what? I just watched that with two other guys I'm in this with, and I just said, how about this for a plan? Hopefully it'll rise up, you know, towards the results. We'll put a stop loss in at £11.10, which is our 10%.
Yeah, good idea.
And then if it goes higher, it goes higher. If it comes back, we'll sell out 10%, you know? So
yeah, that's a good idea. Using a trailing stop loss like that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So individual stocks, what are you looking at this week?
Just to say, in those traffic stats, did they mention the... you know, the load capacity.
Yeah, the load factor. I mean, there's a couple of them are down by, in fact, July up 1.5%, June up 1.4%. The first down was in May, but it was 0.1%.
That's nothing, is it?
Yeah, and in April it was 0.4% down. In fact, the worst month was March, 1.3% down. But other than that, it's either gain or 0.1%. So it's not massive, you know? I mean, I can't see there's a massive change there. Most of the time, they are more than average. And they've got new airlines coming on, new aircraft coming on, which are more efficient anyway. And so I'm thinking, I'm hoping. So it's oversold, you know?
I mean, the other good thing on it is obviously you've got a big dividend support as well. Because the dividend must be, what, 4.5%? 5%?
It was 5% at the moment, yeah. But the trouble is...
That's going to attract income buyers, you know? So gives you a good bit of support, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Marvellous stuff. Okay, so what are you looking at, individual stock-wise?
Yeah, well, one that I wanted to mention was... the good old utility-wise, UTW, which I think is about £1.25 when I look just now.
I'm looking right now. It's up, actually. 2.2% today. It's 1.28 at the moment. Yeah.
It's such a choppy thing. It's like, mind you, there's a very obvious reason why it's so choppy. And that is, you know, with, what's his name, Woodford.
Yeah.
Has got, 27% of the shares.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's got 27%. There's going to be other big holders as well. If you think about it, the free float on that stock must be absolutely tiny, which is why it tends to be so choppy, why it tends to, you know, it's so volatile. Some mornings it's up 4% and it ends the day down 5%, you know, and it's just all over the place. But it's interesting. It seems to be building support above sort of 120-ish now. And I think the actual low is about 112 recently.
That's right.
Obviously, if it breaks below 112, then it's probably heading down to a pound or whatever. But I mean, the thing with UTW and what I like about it, I actually wrote a blog about this, which is on my website. I think I did it last week, where I had a really good look into it, because I thought, well, you know, I've got to make a decision. Is this a company I stay with, or is it, you know, one that I move on? And I had a really good look at it. And the thing that stands out to me is that in the past, you look at their historic achievement, as in their revenue growth over, well, I think we can see 6 or 7 years. They've been going 10 years, they've been operating. In those 6 or 7 years, their revenue has gone up every single year by a lot. You know, even this year when they've had problems, the revenue has gone up a load. And I think when you actually stand back and think, what is really happening in this company? I think the real story here is that they are struggling to cope with a fast growth.
Yeah, well, I saw the last problem. The biggest problem they had in the last announcement, I read about this, because they're on my watch list. I quite like them. I'm thinking, if they do hold this level, I may jump in here. Because wasn't it the staff retention was and getting the amount of staff they needed, pretty much, and that was the problem they had, you know?
I mean, I think, I get the impression it wouldn't be the nicest place to work. You know, it's a sort of high-pressure core center, you know, pressurized environment, I think. And I suspect they recruit people in, and after a while, these people feel, oh God, I don't like this, you know, and off they go. And I suspect that's a lot of the problem. And then throw in the fact they're expanding so fast. When their staff numbers, you know, because the revenue and is very linked to the staff numbers. The more staff they get, the more customer site they sign up, the more revenue they make. And it's very much that model. And if you look at how the staff numbers have ramped up, you know, it's no great surprise they're going to be feeling some growing pains. And it's interesting, I mentioned in my blog, I've seen this on so many good companies before. And a great example is Supergroup. I remember when, you know, Superdry, Supergroup, SGP, when they first launched, you know, they did really well after the IPO. I think they went up to about 18 quid or something. Then the shares fell right back because they had profit warnings and stuff. And what was happening there was they just couldn't cope with the growth. They were growing at 35% a year. And you try servicing that level of growth, you know, it's difficult to do. And I think that's exactly where UTW is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm reading a slight update. Exactly. I'm reading a slight update. I mean, look at the group's adjusted EBITDA expected to be greater than 18 million from 17.8 million. So, it's growing there.
Yeah.
Net debt has come down to 0.2 million from 6.7 million. Another good, figure there. And as announced half year, staff attrition has continued to be a challenge. So that's the issue, the staff. But they say they're addressing this. And obviously, when you've got a problem like that and everything else seems to be going well, then at least they're addressing it. They're onto it, you know. So,
I mean, one of the reasons, as you said, that the profit is only going to be slightly up this year, whereas other years it's been up like 15-20%. The reason it's only going to be slightly up this year is because they're putting a lot of money into trying to solve this staff attrition problem, and they're putting a lot of money into investing into the website and into social media and stuff like that as to how they recruit new customers. So they want to try, they're trying to go to more of an automated thing where customers pretty much sign up themselves. Yeah. That's the way it's going, which will obviously make life a lot more pleasant for the call center staff. Is that, you know, if a lot of the stuff is sort of automatic and whatever, and a lot easier. So that's where the money, you know, they've been investing. I think I read they've invested about six million or something in the website or whatever. And one of the other things that's really interesting is the customer numbers. Now, to be honest with you, I've forgotten, but off the top of my head, I'm thinking 30,000 customers or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got a massive customer base. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's growing all the time. So, I think another thing that hasn't been picked up on is they're doing stuff in Europe.
You were good with your figures. I just checked then. The enterprise increasing total enterprise customers by up 21% to 30,000 552, yeah. So that's...
I missed the 62, damn. Yeah. So one of the things that's been missed is that they've started to do stuff over in Europe. I think it's Germany. I can't quite remember. And what's interesting is, as they said in the latest statements, they will be at break-even on that business this year. Mm-hmm. And they've only been doing it like 2 minutes, like literally a year or two at the most.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact they're already moving to break-even after they've had all the setup costs and whatever of doing it, it shows they must be doing something right with that, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's some interesting corporate governance things that the guy who started it, he's just moved from being the chief executive to now being the executive chairman.
So
he's moved, you know, he's going to have a more, much more strategic role. And they've brought in this guy, Brendan Flowery or something, who's going to be the CEO now, ex-Sage. Yeah, he looks like a reasonable appointment. And there was something I read where he'd been interviewed or something, and he sort of said some sensible things, you know, so you can never tell, obviously. On the downside, I mean, there was another guy they recruited to sort out some of the problems, and he's gone. He was only in about 6 months, and he's gone. That's a negative. Steve Atwood, that's a negative.
Yeah, he turned out to be one of the problems, so they got rid of him.
You do wonder, don't you? But, you know, it's funny because obviously we can never really know the reasons unless we're really, really close to the business. But one of the things that struck me was maybe he doesn't get on with a new CEO. You know, there's a new guy being brought in above him, effectively. He's probably thinking, oh, hang on.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't surprise me. The other negative, that one of the reasons that I like to think utility-wise is too cheap. When you look at the PE rating, the forward PE is something like 6.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's absurd. The dividend is, forward dividend is something like 5%.
Yeah.
It's just too cheap. How many stocks do we see now with a dividend on a PE of 6, with no debt, with fast growth? We just don't see any, you know, and so I think that's quite an anomaly. And, you know, why couldn't that be on a PE of 12, which would double the share price from here? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't it be on 6, you know, why couldn't it be on 18 PE? If it can get its nose clean and have a good couple of years behind it, it could easily trade on a PE of 18, which would treble the share price.
Yeah.
And that's before you get any growth in your profit. So,
What? I mean, these are on my watch list, and right now it's hitting. I've got a sort of price alert between 120 and about 130. And because it's almost like it hasn't, if you look at the 200-day moving average, it hasn't got over that. It had one little foray above that back in May last year, 2015.
Yep.
It went up and came back down. But literally, it's been trading under that. It's touched it a couple of times, but it hasn't closed a day above that for a while. And that's, I mean, that is at 160, so it'll probably come down a little bit. But it seems to be carving out a base here at 120 odd. Like, you're right, a support level there, you know?
One of the historic things that people need to be aware of, and this is one of the reasons why it's so cheap, this is why the bargain, the anomaly is there, is that they had a bit of a bear raid a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever it was, where basically a lot of people started pointing the finger at the accounting and some serious short sellers were shorting it like hell, doing a proper concerted bear raid, and the thing got absolutely hammered. And I think it's struggling to recover from that. And a lot of people just make a knee-jerk assessment and say, "Oh, utility-wise, it's rubbish. It's got accounting problems." What they've missed is that those problems have all been addressed and are in the process of being addressed. So it was all about when they sign up an existing customer, they weren't getting the revenue. You know, they were booking the revenue up front. They weren't getting the cash.
Yeah, that's right. They're a bit aggressive in the accounting, but like I said, that's been sorted
How that's changed, and they're getting 80% up front. And let's be honest, would Neil Woodford have 27% in a company that had really dodgy accounts? It just seems unlikely. And how can they pay a dividend? They've been paying me a dividend every year for 4 or 5 years. So how could they be doing that if they've got such problems? You know, so. Yeah, I think it's one of these things where it was yesterday's problem, but people are still worrying about it.
Yeah, do you know what's hard? This company, like you say, it's got they're trading very well. They've sorted out their cash flow issues there, and it's hit the 100 million market cap. That's all they are, you know. And I'm thinking, I've seen all stocks, you know, on AIM trade at this level. They got no revenue, nothing whatsoever going for them, and yet it's just built on hype and hope, you know. And it's quite odd. These pay a dividend as well. So yeah, I like, you know, I'm definitely it's on my watch list, and I've been very close a couple of times over the last week to pressing the buy button. I'm just waiting for confirmation that 120 level is, you know, a solid support level. So yeah,
I suppose if we want a breakout up above what 135 or something, you know, that would probably on an end of day close, a break above 135 would probably be a good signal that the bottom's in.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like I said, I always buy in tranches anyway, so I wouldn't put my entire. Oh, right. Fully expecting another 5% drop maybe, and I'd buy some more then. So another 5%, and I'd buy some more, and the three buys I'd go for. And so I think, you know, will it fall another sort of 15, you know, percent from here? I shouldn't think so, really.
If it does, fantastic. You know what I mean? Yeah. It would be really cheap, wouldn't it? I mean, if you could pick it up around £1, that would be absurdly cheap. So,
yeah, exactly. You know. Marvellous. Well, listen, fella, thanks for the heads up on that. And it's renewed my sort of confidence in them. So they're firmly on my watch list.
I've done a pretty detailed blog that goes into the sort of stuff I've been saying, plus some more detail that might be, you know, worth a look on my website.
Okay, cool. Well, I'll link to your website there, and people can check it out. And speak soon, fella.
Brilliant. Nice to meet you. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And there's no coincidence here. That the fact is that some of these stocks perform very well that are followed highly, who appear in this list quite often. Okay, at five, it's Tullow Energy. Good release today. Talking about their renewed agreement with General Electric. At four, Bell Zone Mining, BZM, a new entry there. At three, a regular, Prospects Oil and Gas, PXOG. I actually sent out a chart yesterday, and after yesterday's rally in the share price, that's the first time that share price has finished above its 200-day moving average, ever. That's a bullish sign. At two, it's the play on virtual reality. It's EVRH Holdings, worth checking out if you think virtual reality is going to be big. And at one, after the interview yesterday with Eric Shea on the podcast, the CEO of MySquare makes it number one. It's MYSQ. It's a social network based in the Republic of Myanmar. A very fast-growing economy. And a very fast-growing sector, so worth checking out. Do some research on that. Put it on your watch list. I would if I were you. All right, today's suggested one for your watch list has been submitted by Mark, and it's Galileo Resources, GLR ticker. What does the company do? Galileo Resources is essentially a copper exploration and development company with interests in Nevada and South Africa. Its prime interest is a Concordia project in Northern Cape District of Ukiep in South Africa. Ukiep. I don't know if I said that right. The company currently owns a 34% interest in a phosphate rare earth project in northwest South Africa, close to the Botswana border. How many shares does the company have in issue? 194 million. What's the current price and market cap? It's 1.05 pence, market cap 2 million. What revenue and profit did the company generate? No profit at the moment. In their half-year statement, 6 months ended the 30th of September, they made a loss for the period of £170,000. So not huge there. All right, how much cash or debt does the company have? Total cash debt in the half year for the 6 months ended September 2015 showed 220,000. And on the 1st of March, which is after their release, of course, they raised 335,000 gross through the issue of 37.5 million shares at 1p. As part of the placing, Colin Bird, the company's chairman, and Richard Wallenberg, the company's non-executive director, have respectively subscribed for 5 million and half a million shares. There's three reasons why the people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, Concordia Copper Play has potential to be one of the largest super pits in the world. Wow, it's in the top three. Number two, Colin Bird is a majority shareholder with over 34% of shares. And three, defined exit plan, prove up, sell to a major. So that's Galileo Resources. Check it out. Please do your own research. And a good way of doing that, actually, is by just putting it on your watch list. And that way you'll get RNSs straight to the front screen of your phone whenever they release it. So just type in GLR, search on Vox, add follow, and it'll be on your watch list, and you'll get information when they release it. Please, do me a favour. Very soon, and I've been talking about this for a while, very soon we'll have likes and dislikes on the app for RNSs. This would help me hugely. I want to make it as a feature. So as soon as you get your updated app, please do it. It's already on the website, but I understand more people use the app and stuff. And it's on a mobile website as well. But more people use the app. But when that starts happening, if you like an RNS and if you objectively read it and think it's a positive one, hit the thumbs up. If you think it's a dog of an RNS, hit the thumbs down. Let people know, all right? And I'll report on this. Hopefully it'll be this week and I'll be updated on the app. And also, you know, submit. If you know of a company that should be on people's watch lists, then please submit one. Go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog and click one of my blog posts there and you'll see the link within that just on the bottom there. Thanks so much. It's just filling in a form. Thank you very much for listening. Much appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.